The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, the book called Hear Me is a memoir about childhood neglect, childhood sexual abuse, and living in care. But it's also one of the best examples of resilience and survival. Here to tell us her story, welcome to the show, Liz Hubbock.
Hello, welcome. Thank you for having me on.
You're very welcome. Congratulations on the book. I hear you went to the factory to watch it get printed.
Yeah, I did. That was definitely an opportunity that I thought, I can't miss this. I'll actually see my book coming off in streams and streams with my name and the title of the book. So yeah, it was one of those experiences that you never think is ever going to be something that you do. So I was like, I am there, took my friend, off we went on a road trip. And yeah, it was amazing because having the book actually published is kind of the end result, isn't it, in terms of getting that book out there, getting people to read it and kind of take on board what I'm saying. But it's a long process, you know. It's been 6 years in the making, so finally standing there that day holding the first copy that came off the printing was amazing. It was a bit overwhelming, but in a great way.
I'm sure it was. Well, the book's got a great message. It's very inspirational, very sad as well. Do you mind just telling us a little bit about your story and what the book is about?
Yeah, absolutely. So Hear Me is a memoir, and it goes from my very early childhood up until the age of 18. So I talk a lot about my experience of living in poverty when I was younger, coming from a single parent family where my mum had quite a few undiagnosed mental health conditions, I believe, and she still does. But when you're a kid, you don't really know any different, do you? So we didn't have any money. We often were, you know, walking from door to door selling items that no one wanted to buy, a bit like eBay nowadays. But yeah, we didn't have any food. I was a school refuser for very much of my childhood. And it was only really when I was probably, I don't know, 7, 8, 9, that I really noticed that my mum was drinking a lot of alcohol. But again, as a child, you don't really realize anything's different. Like, normal is normal, isn't it? Everyone's experiences of life are normal to them. And you don't realize that maybe it's not that great or not that healthy until you're kind of exposed to maybe a different life. So I talk about that realization of starting to go out to friends' houses and thinking, oh, you know, they've got food in the house, and, you know, their parent or their mum is cooking dinner for them, and they've got a lot of that care there. And although my mum cared for me, she couldn't really protect me or keep me safe. So yeah, I realised that mum preferred vodka than beans on toast. And so I talk a lot about that. I talk a lot about the kind of shame that coming from that background brings, and the bullying that comes with that from school. And that's, you know, I was very vulnerable as a very vulnerable young person, and I didn't have anyone kind of protecting me. I had no kind of wider network of that support around me, which led me to being extremely vulnerable, desperate for love, desperate for attention. And unfortunately, that love and affection and attention came in the form of a school bus driver when I was 13.
Really?
Yeah. So then the book goes on a more darker turn, where this, you know, I did end up entering a relationship with the school bus driver. Again, I was only 13, and it's very sometimes tricky to talk about that as an adult now. And I've kind of worked within this sector now for many years, and I have a much greater understanding and depth of knowledge around that. But at the time, when you're 13 and, you know, you come from a bit of a broken home, so to speak, you are kind of desperate, which is you know, really dangerous. And I was in a really dangerous situation, got myself involved with somebody. Well, I didn't get myself involved, but I was in that situation. And yeah, he took me down a path of destroying my family, really, and kind of pushing me off that cliff edge of, you know, starting to not engage in school, being isolated from my friends. And there's, I won't go into too much detail because hopefully your lovely listeners might choose to read it. But he was very manipulative, very controlling, started becoming very controlling over my mother as well. There was lots of betrayal from my mum on that side of things. And I still had that kind of sense of character that I have now, even then. And I very, very quickly realised what this man was doing. And actually, I wasn't very safe. But there's no one to go to. There's no one to talk to. The police and children's services did get involved. And I was put on what was known as the at-risk register back then. And even though there were huge red flags, our non-engagement, my refusal to talk to anybody, they already knew as well that this man was a risk to children, because I've recently got my care records to look at that.
And he was a bus driver. They allowed him to be a bus driver.
Yes, he was a bus. These people know exactly the jobs to get to get access to young people, unfortunately. But yeah, no one at that time really kind of reached out that hand where I could feel safe to talk about actually what was going on. So I was dealing with all of that on my own. And yeah, it wasn't great, which is why this is the point of me talking about this, is because there are so many young people out there and adults really that are in situations where there's something going on that they can't talk about because we don't talk about it. You know, society doesn't talk about this because it's uncomfortable, and we choose actually to, you know, live a life where we don't have to worry unless it's really impacting us. But unfortunately, this kind of thing does impact so many people. So we do need to start talking about it in order for us to kind of harvest these safe environments where people can talk.
Is it better now, Liz, than it was back then when it happened to you?
I would say largely looking in, yes, it is. It has improved, but it's still such a long way to go. And even though things are improving, you know, there's been national campaigns, especially over here in the UK, around violence against women and girls, you know, calling out violence, calling out concerning behaviour. But it's always put into the hands of us as a society. And yes, we should look out for signs. And yes, we should know how to spot the signs of abuse and how to respond appropriately. But we're still not really calling out the people that are doing the harm in the first place. And that's part of my kind of call to action from my book, is we talk a lot about how to protect children. But exactly what does that look like? You know, why aren't we calling out the people that are doing the harm? Like, if you think about, and this goes across the board, like, you know, sexual violence towards kind of any age or any gender, really, it's always how to keep yourself safe. So I remember seeing, and I've done quite a lot of work in this area over the last few years, but when you look at advertising campaigns for, or awareness campaigns for the nighttime economy, for instance, there'll be a poster up that says, you know, how to stop yourself from being attacked this evening. So it's always kind of targeted at the women, how to keep yourself safe, don't go off on your own, stay with your group. Or there was one that once said, which one of your friends is most likely to get spiked tonight? Now, why is it always towards the women or towards the children? How to protect yourself, what to look out for, how to talk out about when you're not safe? Why isn't it targeted at the perpetrators, you know? Why aren't we seeing signs and adverts pointed towards, I'm talking about men and women here, we know it is, you know, across all genders, but why aren't we seeing ones that say, you know, which one of your friends is most likely to attack tonight or rape someone tonight? But we don't talk about it because we are uncomfortable. We're almost, and maybe it's that kind of those British values as well as being very polite. But why don't we just say how it is? Because all the while we're kind of refusing to recognise this. Children and young people are being harmed, you know?
If somebody, I see what you're saying, because I was going to ask you what you would say to your younger self. What should a 13-year-old girl who is being obviously groomed by an adult, what should they do? And, you know, who should they be telling somebody? Should they go to the police? You know, if they haven't got a family to go to. But my second question, just on that point that you've made, is what can we do? I mean, like you say, which of your friends is likely to attack tonight? You're right, we're British, we don't ask those sort of questions. So what should we be doing?
So what should we be doing is a huge question. And I knew that you'd ask something like this. It's a huge jigsaw puzzle. So it's massive. We need to be going into schools from a very, very early age. And I know people like the NSPCC have a really good kind of preventative program at the moment called Speak Up, Stay Safe. And that's going into kind of primary schools or secondary schools to talk to young people about how to recognise when they might be feeling uncomfortable, who they can speak to, who is a trusted adult. So that's one piece, that education. But the curriculum across the UK, yes, they have to have sex education, but it's not across the board. Kind of individual schools can choose how what they teach. So that's a bit of a postcode lottery. So it's not kind of mandatory across the country, or I believe Europe is further behind than us as well. So there's that element, there's that education, but there's also education for parents too, because there's a lot of parents or carers who, you know, maybe aren't that interested in what's going on in school, but this is such a big issue. There needs to be more programs for that and more advertising, because these things do exist, but there needs to be more advertising for what to look out for, and also how to recognise when you might have a concern about someone you're in a relationship with or a member of your family, because unfortunately we all know it. You get a feeling sometimes about someone, don't you? But unless it's promoted about where we can go, what we can do for support, people are really stuck with knowing what to do and where to go. And I can mention some of the organisations that can help with that.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. So the young people and children themselves, then the kind of family unit as a wider kind of model, and then also the perpetrators, you know, really focusing on calling out people and doing that campaign. There's a really good organisation, a charity in Scotland called the Lucy Faithful Foundation. And they are across the whole of the UK. And I believe as well, your listeners over there, there's a website that you can go on and access that support to from where you are. And they really look at helping people recognize when they're starting to have concerning thoughts about harming children, where to go. They have an anonymous helpline and text service and anonymous kind of workshops that they can do in counseling for people, because there's a very fine line, isn't there, between calling everyone an abuser and you know, this is really bad, and it is, but these people also need help, which is a bit of a touchy subject for some people. But unless we really try and get to the core reasons why this harm is happening, why they want to inflict this harm and control over young people, we're not going to really get there. So I believe there's kind of three elements to this, you know, concentrating on the young people, concentrating on kind of parents, adults, carers and families, and then concentrating on trying to help people that might abuse children, or calling out, making them aware of the impact they have not only on the person that they abuse, but their life too. But as I said before, I went off on this rant, Selena, it's a huge, huge jigsaw. And I think the biggest thing that we can do, I mean, there'll be many of you that are listening today that have a bit of experience with this, maybe personally, maybe in the area that you work in. And I myself have experience over 20 years working in this kind of sector, but I'm not a professor, I'm not a doctor in psychology, but I do have that lived experience. And I think sometimes people need to hear it from people that have lived this life, have a deeper understanding and start talking. That's the biggest thing. Start having these conversations with the children that you look after, with your friends. I've had so many, and you know, I haven't released the book yet, but even as I've been talking on kind of my social media over the last couple of years, I've had people come to me that I've known that I'm maybe not that close to, but have said, you know, thank you so much. This has actually given me the courage to make a police report about something that happened to me years ago.
Excellent.
But this happens so much. We hear, you know, a day doesn't go past really where we don't hear something in the media about someone that's been accused of something, or, you know, the Jeffrey Epstein thing, which is going on and on and on. There is
there's Rotherham, isn't there? There's a lot happening with Rotherham and the county lines.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's huge. It's a lot bigger than people think. I think, you know, at the moment it's estimated that 1 in 20 children will be the victim of child sexual abuse before they're 16. And it's believed to be a lot higher than that. But obviously these are only the reports that are reported to the police. And in, I think it was 2022 to 2023, there were over 87,000 sexual offences against children recorded by the police. So it's...
shocking.
It's not a drop in the... Well, it is a drop in the ocean, really. It's huge. And I think we just need to talk about it and make it a bit more accessible as well. I think that's what my book is intending to do. Is, you know, I've read a lot of these books, which I love. The first one I read when I was probably about 18 was A Child Called It by Dave Peltzer.
Yes, I do. Yeah,
that was kind of like a groundbreaking one. And I think people were really shocked by that. And I definitely know I wasn't necessarily shocked, but I was, it was amazed. I was amazed that someone's lived through such adversity and such awful things as a child and has spoken about it. And it made me think, God, I've got a story to tell, you know, I can talk about this. And that kind of, I guess, gave me the drive to get through life's hardships, trying to achieve something. And for me, that was just having money to put food on the table and get a roof over my head back then. But it kind of gave me that passion that I can get through something too.
Yeah, and you absolutely have. And I think the book's going to be inspirational for a lot of people. I know that you've got children of your own now. Have you told them about it? Do they know about the book?
Yeah, they do. So again, this is one of those things I didn't tell them until last week, actually, because I'm one of those people that this has been an incredible journey, you know, getting a literary agent, getting a publisher, getting a publishing deal. But there's always a part of me that thinks, yes, but is it actually going to happen, Liz? I'm quite a realist. So I was leaving it until the very last minute. And then just before I went to watch them being printed, I thought, okay, this is the time. So I did tell them. Now, my children are kind of 13 and 9. So they're a little bit younger, but I've always been very, very open with them about my early childhood, not necessarily the sexual abuse part of things, but my early childhood. And they know what sexual abuse is. I've always had open conversations with them at an age appropriate kind of level so that they know if anything happens or they're worried about a friend, they can always come and talk to me. But I think telling them that bit had happened to their mum, you know, that might be quite upsetting for them. So I decided to talk about the book as a whole. They're boys at the moment. They really would rather be on their PlayStation or their tablet. They're not really going to pick up my book, but they did pick it up and they kind of looked at the front cover and kind of went through some of it. But they telling them bits and pieces as we go, so it's not too overwhelming for them.
Yeah, excellent. Can I ask what happened to your perpetrator? What happened to the bus driver? Was he convicted?
Yes, he was. So he went to prison in 1997. So when I was 17, the police contacted me. So I hadn't gone to the police myself. I thought, you know, through all this, no one's ever going to believe me. You know, I'm a child that's in the care system. No one's ever going to believe me. So I didn't decide to go to the police when I was younger. I didn't feel ready, as, you know, a lot of victims don't feel ready until they're much older. But the police contacted me because he had been arrested for something else, and they managed to find some information which led them to me. And of course, I decided that I would go. I think I gave at the time, it was before interviews were done on video, and I think I wrote like a 25-page statement. It's probably most of my book, could have kept it. So we went to court in 1997, so he was found guilty. But I believe he only got, I think it was 30 months, and that was reduced to half.
Crazy, absolutely crazy. Well, sadly, we're running out of time, but I know that you're hopeful that your story will contribute to a change in the culture we live in, which is very important. Did you say you could give us a couple of organisations in case it piqued somebody's interest?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd always say, as a first point of call, the NSPCC. There's lots of support there for anyone. And also the one that's a little bit more out there is the Lucy Faithful Foundation. So that's, again, really looking at the perpetrators. And if you have any concerns about anyone that you know or you live with, do look that up, and there'll be lots of support and advice there for you too.
Wonderful. Well, as I say, congratulations on the book. I think it's out on Thursday, isn't it?
It is on Thursday. Oh, yes, thank
lovely.
You so much.
So for our listeners, you can buy it from Thursday. In fact, you can pre-order it from our website, from our bookstore, tre.radio. It's called Hear Me, and we are hearing you, Liz, and it's by Liz Hubbock, who we're chatting to now. You've done really well. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us and being so open and honest.
Thank you so much. Take care, everyone.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.